episode 32, Minimalism with Joshua Becker.
Welcome to the Frugal Friends Podcast, where you'll learn to save money, embrace simplicity, and live a richer life. Here are your hosts, Jen and Jill.
Welcome to another episode of the Frugal Friends Podcast. My name is Jen.
Hey, hey, this is Jill.
And we have an awesome, awesome, awesome show for you today. It's not very often that I use three adjectives to describe an episode that are the same. But
yeah, I don't think you've ever done it.
I've never done that before, but it's how I feel today. And
it's accentuating a point.
Yes. And Joshua also complimented me on my use of henceforth. So yeah, feeling pretty good, really good about this today. We got to bring you our sponsors first though, because we have to get into this. So we've partnered with CookSmarts, and we're going to keep talking about them because our listeners can get 25% off meal planning with CookSmarts using the promo code Frugal. And you can always get your first three meal plans free if you sign up through frugalfriendspodcast.com/CS. And so if you are looking for just a break from meal planning yourself, or you're trying to get started with it, definitely head to frugalfriendspodcast.com/CS and see what they have to offer. Meal plans, grocery lists, customized diets. It's really great. And then if you do go on to buy a quarterly or a yearly meal plan, you can get 25% off of that using the promo code Frugal.
Awesome. And also, this is brought to you by magazines. All the content you ever need, except it can all be found on the internet. Oof. So, got a magazine? Recycle it. Or make a collage. Doesn't really matter what you do with a magazine. Just know that eventually it belongs in the trash. And thanks to minimalism, what we're talking about today, this is going to become really easy for you as you start to put this into practice. So magazines, don't use them.
Did the magazine industry write this, or did you, Jill? Because as a sponsor, I don't think they would have approved.
It's an interesting sponsor, and maybe it's sponsored actually by the internet, but then making you think it's a weird kind of marketing.
Collage industry.
The collage industry. Next week, you'll hear more from the collage industry. Yeah.
Before you put it in the trash, cut it up and put it on a piece of paper so that later you can put that in the trash too.
Later it can be in the trash. Or your big dream board that will eventually go in the trash.
Go in the trash. Yeah. Sorry. Well,
bow, bow. On that note,
let's get into this amazing interview we had with Joshua Becker. I hope you guys were reading along with the More of Less in our book club this month. If you weren't, if you're listening to this at a later date, you are not in for any spoilers in the book. You're just in for more lovely information that's going to make you want to get his book and the other books that he has coming out in the future. So enjoy. We are super excited to have Joshua Becker with us today. How are you, Joshua?
Oh, I am wonderful. I'm excited to be with you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on the Frugal Friends Podcast. I know we've been super excited for this interview, and we know that our community group is. We're just excited to explore minimalism a little more. It's something we already know people are interested in. Some of these questions, I really want to know the answers to. So
yeah,
they're always kind of a little selfish. So whenever I ask questions, but
yeah, we're so thrilled to have you on the show today, Joshua. And we so appreciate your book, The More of Less, which I know a lot of our listeners have gone through. I just feel like you highlighted really well the ancient paths to a rich and full life. Namely, you mentioned contentment and placing a high value on relationships. And you just laid an excellent foundation for the why of minimalism with such tangible and actionable steps to practice in our own lives. So you just did a phenomenal job. So I know that this is going to be a really rich time to get to pick your brain a bit more.
Good. I appreciate that. That's a lot of kind words. So thanks. An ancient path. Yeah. I suppose I tried. I told my publisher when I was writing the More of Less, I'm not looking just to write, you know, here's what to keep and here's what to get rid of. But I very thoughtful approach to owning less and what it's meant in my life and what I think some of the deeper benefits are for it.
It's certainly more than decluttering. I learned that even more after going through your book. I know we'll get into that, but man, is it some soul searching that kind of comes along with it. So
yeah. And you guys, if you are listening to this at a later date and did not get to read The More of Less with us, definitely go pick up a copy. It will definitely help you kind of form your perspective on minimalism and how you want to take that further in your life. You can literally tell from the very first chapter that it's going to change your mind. And I hate saying like change your life, but it can. So
it might.
It might change your life. We'll see.
That's the goal. The goal.
We'll see.
Yeah. Hopefully it will.
So let's get into our first question. So Joshua, when you decided to eliminate the non-essentials, how did you determine what the essentials were? Especially because I know that there are some things that are really easy to get rid of, but kind of when you got to that midway point, like how do you drill down on the essentials?
Well, it's not a easy question in that I don't think there's a lot of easy answers to it. There are some, you run into little tips and tricks and ideas online and, you know, put your clothes with the hangers facing one direction. And then when you put them back, put them differently so you can see what you're wearing and what's your art. And that's helpful. And you can do like at the end of seasons, you know, if I didn't use this during the entire summer season, I'm probably not going to need it next. And if you haven't used it in 6 months, you probably won't need it. Like some of those are helpful and, are good things to do. But for me, I found that the question of essential versus non-essential things became actually a much deeper question. Like even some of the soul searching stuff that you even mentioned already in the intro. Good. We get to get deep on the very first question.
Yes.
I found it was actually someone who commented pretty early, becoming minimalist was just an online diary and online journal of what I was getting rid of and what I was keeping. And at one point I was kind of faced with this question, you know, like the outdated stuff is easy to get rid of, but like when you really start digging deep into like, what do I need to keep and what do I need to get rid of? And I remember just posting on the blog one night that this was like really causing me to search my heart in ways that I didn't know it was going to bring about. And actually a commenter on the blog said, yeah, it seems to me that minimalism would force questions of values onto your life. And I think that like summed up exactly what I was going through and why it's not, you know, what is essential and what is not essential can be more than which direction your hangers are facing. It's legitimately about what kind of life do I want to live? What do I think my purpose is in life? What do I want to accomplish? Not just what do I want to experience, but what do I want to do with the one life that I have? And then when you begin answering those questions, you can start piecing, okay, so these are the possessions that I need in order to accomplish that better. And these are all the things that are just keeping me from it. How do you determine the essential from the non-essential? There's tips and tricks that are helpful, but mostly I think it's about, you know, defining your purpose and then trying to align your possessions in tune with that pursuit.
Yeah, that's excellent. I think one of the most challenging things that you brought up in your book was giving up things that you hardly use, even if they define our ideal image of self. Mm-hmm. And I think we talk about this when we think about what we want to purchase of, do I really need that paddleboard? How often am I going to use it? But it was challenging to me to think through, well, what do I already have that I need to apply that principle to of, you know, the example that you gave of this woodworker who wanted to keep all of his woodworking things because he wanted to be a really good woodworker. And sometimes he used that, but my goodness, how that can keep us stuck sometimes, or even stripping away our reputation, you taking off, you know, your credentials from the wall. Like, what was that process like?
Yeah. Dave Bruno, who had the woodworking story, he talks about it. He calls it the death of a dream. Mm-hmm. Francine Jay, she talks about decluttering your fantasy self. We have these images of people that we wish we were, and we accumulate all the different things. I just had a friend just tell me he had bought all this video editing equipment because he wants to make videos, and it almost broke my heart a little bit. Like, maybe he will do that, but I just know him well enough that he's like, that's not who he is. That's not what he's good at. He's a very talented musician, but not a very talented videographer. And some of those things that we've accumulated and we're carrying, when we have this vision of being someone different, it keeps us from like fully walking in the people that we are and fully embracing who we actually are. I had someone come up to me one time in Florida after speaking, and he came up to me and he said, you know, you were talking and it occurred to me that back home I have shelves and shelves of books that I've never read. And he said, I am in love with the idea of being a reader. Like, I wish I was a reader, but I'm just not a reader. Like, it's not how I learn. It's not how I grow. And wanting to be that person is keeping me from fully embracing who I am and how I do learn today. Now, none of that means, you know, I'm not saying we don't develop new hobbies and passions and we don't push ourselves forward, you know, in personal development. But I think there comes a time where we need to declutter, you know, the image of who we wish we were so that we can fully embrace the people that we are and make the most of the one life that we do have.
Yeah, that's an excellent summary. Joshua, what are some of the challenges that you faced in this process of minimizing?
Well, I'm more than a family of one. So those were, we started with two kids. My kids were 5 and 2 and my wife. And my wife was on board with owning less, but if I want to get rid of 80%, she wanted to get rid of 50%. And so that was a challenge. I think the challenge of finding time to do it was not uncommon for me, as it is for a lot of other people that I talk to, that it's just a time-consuming process to get rid of your possessions. It takes effort and focus and energy. I think it's all time and focus and energy that comes back to you more in the long run when you put in the investment. But still, we need to find the time to do it. There's the challenge of perseverance, I think. For us, it was, we were a family of 4 and we had a 2,300 square foot home. And so, like, it was a 9-month process of just going through all the rooms and the basement and the garage. And you have to stay motivated throughout that process as well. And yeah, I mean, we just live in a culture that tells us the exact opposite. I mean, advertisements every single day tell us that we'll be happier if we buy more, and our life is missing something until we acquire whatever they're selling. And so finding ways to counteract that message, I think is very important and is a challenge.
Yeah. Speaking of involving multiple people in this process of minimizing, I loved your outline of the different generations' approach to things and lifestyles. I thought that you did that with great dignity. It was so refreshing to hear your compassion and understanding for why the silent generation might be stashing up coffee cans and grocery bags.
Yeah.
But then conversely, why millennials seem to be approaching minimalism with ease. And this thought occurred to me of, you know, then when you meld those generations. So right now I live with my grandmother. And so I have fully embraced minimalism, but my grandmother has not. And she also has Alzheimer's. And so to change up her environment too much is not good for her health. And so the way that you summarized the book was very helpful for me and kind of like how to hold these things in balance and still value other people. But can you highlight for us some of the things that you even talk about in your book of how to do this with a family, how to do this? Okay, you might have grasped hold of this minimalism idea, but how do you incorporate others in that process?
Yeah, I think always with love and humility and patience, that this is how we approach any of that. That my hope for minimalism is that it would draw, that I would become a better husband because of it, that I would become a better father because of owning less. Like these are some of the biggest passions for embracing minimalism in my life. And so it would be a shame if I let minimalism come in between me and my wife or me and my kids. Right.
Yeah.
Like I want it to draw us together. And so that approaches, I think, how we have conversations, right? That it's not nagging, upset, frustrated conversations about minimalism, but they're life-giving conversations. What might draw her to owning less might be different than what I would want to get out of it. And so having the conversation in ways that my wife or someone's husband, the way they understand it is a helpful way to do it. I think humility is incredibly important. That, you know, it's always easier to see everyone else's clutter than it is to see our own. And so, people have to do their own things first. You know, you can't make your kids declutter their stuff. You can't make your spouse declutter theirs. You can't make your grandma do hers, right? Like
you probably shouldn't do it for them either.
Especially if you're living in their home, right?
Yeah.
You have to do your own. You have to realize that you're not perfect in the relationship either. That there are.
What?
Exactly.
Don't tell Jill that.
that no doubt there are things that your spouse, you know, wishes that you would change, but you're not budging on, and so expecting that to happen in their life. And then patience, just because you may be challenged in this area, and you may have read a website, or you may have read a book or a blog that prompted you to start thinking about minimalism and growing in that way, doesn't mean that your spouse or children aren't growing themselves, aren't changing in positive ways. It just might be in a different area of life than the one that you're embracing at the time. Of course, like I mentioned before, but we'll reiterate that none of us are perfect in our relationship. So we try to do the best that we can.
Yeah. And there's so much freedom in that too. Like to give yourself freedom that minimalism will look one way for you than it does for another person, but then giving that freedom to the people that you're living with too.
Yeah. And it's such a parallel with like getting your spouse and your family on board with paying off debt or lowering expenses too. I love the way that you put it. We're not perfect and they are growing, but it could be in a different way than you are growing right now. So I absolutely love that. Joshua, after you minimized your possessions, how did your minimalism evolve beyond that?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I started embracing intentionality in a lot of different areas in life. And actually, the story goes, it was May that I found minimalism. My birthday is in December, so we're about 6 months later. I'd gone through most of the home at that time, and my birthday and Christmas were coming. And I had to decide what I wanted for Christmas. And I'm like, the last thing I want is a new tie or a pair of shoes or watches. Like, I just got rid of four watches. Why would I want another one? And so I started to think, like, what do I want in my life if it's not going to be a physical possession? A Planet Fitness gym had opened up about a mile from my house, and they had this big introductory offer. And I'm like, I think I'm going to ask for that for my birthday. That's not clutter, and it would, you know, be good for my health. And so I got a gym membership for my birthday, and I started going to the gym a little bit more. I had freed up a lot of time with having fewer things to take care of. After a couple months of going to the gym and coming home and having chips and pop, I'm like, this doesn't make any sense.
Pop, that's like a Midwest, that's a yes, Midwest word.
I love it.
Yes, South Dakota, that's my home. That's my
okay. Home,
so yes, I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. And so I started eating healthier and, you know, just like, what do I have in my schedule that doesn't need to be there? How am I spending my time? You know, what do I want to be with my life? And then what is helping me get there, and what is just distracting me from it? So, I mean, the idea of minimalism can be applied to health and time and relationships, work, you know, work, the work that we do. So now I'm entrepreneur, right? Becoming minimalist eventually became my job, writing and speaking, and countless opportunities and things that I could be doing there, but just keep going back to, no, what do I want to do with my life? And then what are the pursuits, even in business and my career, that further me in that mission, and not being distracted by anything else.
And I think you're hitting on the things that minimalism provides. It's not always about decluttering everything. I mean, your book is titled The More of Less. It's what minimalism then affords you to and opens you up to. And, you know, you're describing having more time for relationships, being able to go on speaking engagements. And I'm also wondering, along those lines of what the differences that it makes in your life, how can living a minimalist lifestyle directly change our financial lives?
Directly and indirectly. Directly, I think of selling the clutter that you're getting rid of. I tend to tell people to donate their things, but certainly expensive items or large items are easy to sell. Selling things usually just clogs up the process, but there are some things that are worth selling and taking the time. Mm-hmm. Like that directly. Like very early on, we took a beach trip to New Hampshire. We were in Vermont at the time, and just a beach trip to New Hampshire with some of the money that we had gotten by selling some of the items. And so I remember money coming in from that very, very early on. Even if you're donating, you know, there's tax deductions available for doing that. I think the tax laws have changed a smidge in recent years, but still lots of possibility. Buying less, right? Like, not just getting rid of things, but buying less. Like, immediately I stopped buying things and spending money on buying stuff that I didn't need. And so that's obviously money in your pocket. Maintaining less, you know, getting rid of storage units, just spending less money to care for the things that we already have. I think those are some very direct ways that that it puts more money in our finances. If you're to go like long term and like indirectly, how minimalism affects finances, we moved into a smaller house. We didn't have a storage unit, but people get rid of storage units. We moved into a smaller home, cut our mortgage in half.
Because
we didn't need we didn't need the space to store all the stuff anymore. We had gotten rid of it, and so we just didn't need that. I think that owning less frees up time and energy. If you wanted to, you know, find a second income or pursue a side hustle, you know, if you're not shopping and taking care of stuff, then you're freed up to go do some of that. improved health and well-being. You know, I just like in the long term, that's a huge, you know, financial dividend that comes back to people. So,
Yeah, I always think of these big picture things when I imagine minimalism. And one of my favorite things when we were paying off debt was that whenever I would be working, I would not be spending money. So like working was my favorite way to save money. But can also work the opposite way, is that if you're not spending money, then you have time to pursue these other things that could eventually become a business and maybe even your main business, and just go back to, you know, having the freedom of time. And so all of these things that seem separate are actually all very intertwined.
Yep.
Like I always see the big picture when I'm thinking about minimalism, because I want that freedom.
Yeah. And Joshua, you talk about that in your book, of not just finances that it can free up, but time and energy that it frees up. And I noticed this so much when my husband and I lived in a motor home for a time, just to downsize, to save money, we paid off my master's degree, like entirely. We didn't go into debt for it because we were living so simply. But I noticed too that how quickly it was to clean. Like we didn't have a yard. I had a handheld vac. It literally took me 2 minutes to just vacuum up the whole place. I'm like, okay, now what? I get to go see people. I can do what I want with my time. Like it was so incredibly freeing to just not have to spend so much time upkeeping my things, my home, whatever. And that's where my value is. That's where my priority is to be with people. So yeah, I resonated so much with what you said there about the time and the money.
Yeah. Our possessions are a far bigger burden to our life than we ever realize. And I don't think people realize how much of a burden their possessions are until you start to remove them, you know, and until you, you know, spend a little time living life the way you did. And you're like, man, you know, look how quickly we're paying off these bills and look how much time I have left. And it's great. You know, the subtitle for the More of Less is finding the life you want under everything you own. And again, it just goes back to this idea that our possessions are not the life. I don't know too many people who say their greatest passion in life is just to own as much stuff as possible. Like that's not what we want. That's what we end up doing in one way or another. But certainly we're all desiring something different and better than that. And minimalism makes it possible. Time, money, energy, focus, the whole way.
Wow.
Yeah. You know,
like a great time for I was our just favorite gonna say, time of the week.
There only sounds like one thing that could be better than minimalism. and I think that's
the
bill of the week.
Time for the best minute of your entire week. Maybe a baby was born and his name is William. Maybe you paid off your mortgage. Maybe your car died and you're happy to not have to pay that bill anymore. Duck bills, Buffalo bills, Bill Clinton. This is the bill of the week.
All right, Joshua. So normally we have our friends and listeners call in and give us their bill of the week. But when we have a guest, we invite them to give us their bill of the week. So we would like to hear your bill this week, if you have one.
Well, I would probably say Bill Belichick, coach for the New England Patriots, but probably everybody says that one.
Used 20 out of 30 episodes for sure.
Honestly, when I like the first thing I thought of is, and it's kind of a weird thing to say, but our mortgage payment is probably the bill that I track the most. It's the only debt that we have. There's no consumer debt. We paid off student debt years ago, and so like it's the one bill that we have remaining, and we put extra funds towards it, and my wife actually pays it, but like I'm always kind of tracking with her, you know, what's it down to, you know, we've got some goals to have it paid off by a certain date, and You know, I read one place that if you pay your mortgage, rather than paying it once a month on like the first of the month, whenever it's due, if you pay it half and half, the first and the 15th, that mm-hmm. even that lowers like pretty significantly the interest that you pay, because you pay part of it off a little bit early each month. So,
oh, wow. That's mm-hmm. a good tip. A bill and a tip.
Yes.
Thanks for asking.
Yes, I've heard the same thing. And we, my husband and I, do the same thing because our mortgage is also our only debt. And I will make the payments and he will watch. Like, not me when I'm physically making it. He'll check up on it later. But yeah, and we'll do extra to it every month. And yeah, we're not going like gangbusters at it, but every month we put a little extra to that principal. So yeah, I love that, Bill. Thank you.
It's fun when it's fun when you paid off the month and you're like, oh, another $100 to knock down the principal, you know, and send it in, and it's fun. Good question.
I love it. So if you guys have a bill of the week that you want to share with us, head over to frugalfriendspodcast.com/bill and you can record your bill and leave it for us in our inbox and we will play it.
Excellent. Well, to dive back into some questions and picking your brain a bit more, Joshua, I'm curious about what you, for the listeners who maybe haven't picked up your book yet but are interested in minimalism, what would you say would be a good first step for them? If they're like, I think I want to try this out, how can they kind of dip their toes in the pool of minimalism?
Easiest to hardest, completing areas along the way. This is the Becker method for minimalism.
Okay.
The Becker method.
Yes.
Can I have a method? I don't know.
You can.
People, when they hear about minimalism, like their minds always race to the hardest thing to get rid of. Oh, I could never get rid of my camping gear. I could never get rid of my books. I can never get rid of this or that. Or excuses pop up as to why, you know, oh, but what, you know, I save this for that reason. Or they think of their garage or the storage unit. And I always think that those are really hard, difficult projects, and that people would benefit from starting much easier. You know, declutter your living room or your car is usually where I send people to do like their first project, because you can do it in a short amount of time. You can complete the entire space. The next time you sit in your car, it feels great mm-hmm. and calming mm-hmm. rather than stressful. And then you're like, where else can I have this feeling? And so you do the living room and the bedroom and the closet and the bathroom, and kind of work your way up to those harder spaces, the kitchen and the home office and the basement, kind of like building up the muscle a little bit along the way.
So, I like that.
Yeah. And then you can take your car through the rainbow car wash and all will be right with the world.
Yeah. And you also talk about some very tangible steps too when beginning in this journey of identifying your why. And we talk about this in frugality, financial independence, debt-free living, minimalism. Like it's the identifying the why. But I also like how you encourage readers to sit down and do this first. I think sometimes when we talk minimalism or even frugality, there can be this idea of just start, just do it, just try it on for size, and then it'll come to you why you're doing it. And so for some, that it doesn't work that way. So for you to have put forward, sit down first and think about, why are you going to do this? Why are you going to put your feet to this, your hands to this, and then continue to see what develops. And so I'm curious for you, Joshua, like what were some of your whys? And now, having been living a minimalist lifestyle for so long, how have you seen that actually play out? Like, where do you see the connections between what you first identified as your why and how you now see that lived out in your life?
Yeah, well, you know, the reason this is so important is because owning less is never the goal, right? Like the dream isn't mm-hmm. just to own less. The dream is, what does owning less allow us to do? What's the promise on the other side of the process that is what draws people to it? Me, honestly, it was in the moment I heard the word minimalism, I was cleaning my garage, which I'd been doing for hours while my five-year-old son played alone in the backyard. Mm. And I was complaining to my neighbor. She told me about minimalism. And in the moment, a pile of dirty, dusty things in my driveway I'd spent all morning working on compared to my five-year-old son swinging on the swing set alone in the backyard. And it was, I don't want to own this stuff anymore because I want to spend more time with my son. I want to be a better, literally it was just, I want more time with him. You know, deeper. I want to be a better father. I want to be a better husband. It was that. And then as I began making the change in my life, I could see this is a very spiritual journey for me. You know, faith has always been important to me, and this process allows me to do that better. This process allows me to be more available to friends. This process allows me to play a more significant role in the world and solve bigger problems in the world. And so, yeah, I think that there's usually, I think I even kind of write about it in the book, right? Like, like this changes over time where, actually in my new book, The Minimalist Home, I talk about how we see a goal ahead of us that minimalism will allow us to get to. And it might just be something simple, like spending more time with my son. And then we begin doing that. And suddenly we see bigger things that we can even do with our lives than we ever imagined before when we were weighed down with no money and no time. So yeah, I think it's a process that evolves and changes. And honestly, in the end, I think it allows people to live better, bigger, more fulfilling, more meaningful lives than they ever thought possible. So it's a big promise, but I've seen minimalism do it in my life and in other people's lives as well.
Yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head about why, like in the personal finance space, financial independence has gotten so popular and paying off debt because people are focusing on the freedom that it allows and the greater purpose. And I think it's just all different paths to get to that same goal. I just love the way you put that.
Yeah. And what we've been talking about all along of this thing will uncover and unearth other things. It's not just the act of decluttering. It's what it makes us realize about ourselves. It's how we can further identify where we're going to find real security, acceptance, contentment, like you highlight in your book. So there's so much more to it. And that is why it's such a big movement. I mean, we think it's a big movement now. I mean, yeah, we talked about at the beginning, like these are ancient paths of finding contentment. So
yeah.
Yeah. And you highlighted that so well, Joshua.
Awesome. I have one more question. So what do you think about the KonMari method for people that are super into that?
I am a big fan of anything that helps people own less. So, That is my short answer. I take a very purpose-driven approach to owning less. There are some things that are very helpful in the KonMari method for people to embrace and use and do, and I recommend some of the, like she tells you to put all the books on the floor when you're going through them. And I'm like, yeah, that's a good idea. Just kind of change the environment and change the atmosphere and change the way you look at books. Like, I think that's pretty helpful. You know, she's most known for the question, does it spark joy, as the question that we use if we hold on to items or not. And I think that there's some benefit to that, but I think the question is the wrong question. I think most people buy things because they think they're going to spark joy in their life, which is why we overaccumulate things in the first place. I tend to take a much more purpose-driven approach. Will this item, either directly or indirectly, will this item help me become the person I want to be and do more of what I think is my purpose in life? And if it is, then that's what I should hold on to, because that's ultimately where I'm going to find my greatest joy and meaning in life anyway. So thanks for that passing question at the end.
I love that. I was hoping that would be your answer. So I guess we have one final question. Joshua, tell us all the things that you are working on right now, because You've got some stuff out that is just really great and coming out too.
The biggest thing I'm focusing on now is a book that I have coming out in December called The Minimalist Home, a room by room guide to a decluttered, refocused life. If the more of less is the why embrace minimalism, I've discovered over the last 2.5 years that some people, a lot of people do want the specific, help me attack the kitchen, help me attack the home office, like give me the steps to go through the different spaces in our home. I went through it in my own life. I've helped tens of thousands of others do it in their lives as well and learned a lot through it. So The Minimalist Home is the book that's very, if people live in a home and they've been there for a while, it'll walk 18 different areas in the home. It walks you through. So that's the big thing that I'm talking about now.
Excellent.
I've started a few digital magazines, just drawing together people that I've met, various experts to talk about different things too. But yeah, so always a lot going on, and I love it. I love being able to do it.
Yeah, and if you can't wait for The Minimalist Home to come out, I've read through Simplify and Simple Money, and they're great publications. So, and they're digital, so you will not have a physical product brought into your home.
That's true.
Perfect.
Yes. Thanks for coming on the show, Joshua. It's been a blast.
Thank you for inviting me. It's been a great conversation. You guys are, you're a couple smart interviewers. So well done. I've enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, us too. Thanks for sharing your wisdom.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye. Bye.
Jill.
Wow.
You loved that. I loved
it so much. Could you experience all the love that I had for that interview?
I experienced it and I mirrored it.
Man. What a good one. I don't know that we're going to be able to top it, but we're going to try. We're going to keep going as your frugal friends.
We're going to try every week.
We're going to try to bring you some real valuable things.
Yeah. And I just loved how everything he said about minimalism really mirrored frugality and our goals and our why. And, you know, saving money and having hoards of cash or being debt-free is not the goal. It is the way that you get to the goal. And so for Joshua, having less stuff wasn't the goal. It was how he got to his goal. And just to talk to somebody on the other side of that, what was just a treat.
Yeah. Excellent summary, Jen.
Thank you. So we're done reading The More of Less for this month. And tomorrow, December 1st, we start with The Millionaire Next Door by Thomas J. Stanley. And this is another book that we are really excited for.
And if you want a free copy of The Millionaire Next Door, we are doing the drawing tonight. So you still have time to enter. And to enter, you would leave us a review on your podcast listening device. Remember, that's not just iTunes, but anywhere you listen to this podcast. And then take a screenshot of your review to prove to us that you actually did it. You got to do some work for this freebie.
Yes. I mean, we love you, but we don't trust you.
Yeah. Then send that screenshot to frugalfriendspodcast@gmail.com and we will select the winners tonight. Do it.
Yes. Oh my gosh. And if you are right now, you're just like, ooh, I don't know. I don't know how to review. Gosh, give me an example. Okay. If that's
what
you want.
I heard them ask for it. So yeah, go ahead.
So this one is from Ashton and she says, I fully enjoy this podcast and the girls let you know you're not alone in budgeting, no matter what your financial situation may be. I also, as a mother, appreciated their most recent episode. I don't know when that was, but thank
probably
you,
talked
Ashton.
About motherhood.
Probably. And it was probably with Allison, our episode with Allison.
Maybe. Yeah, that was a good one.
From Inspired Budget. Yeah. But thank you so much for that 5-star review, Ashton. And go ahead and leave us one and screenshot it, send it over, and we'll get you a copy of the next Frugal Friends book club book.
Excellent. Guys, thanks so much for hanging out with us today. If you are loving what you're hearing, which how could you not? Thank you, Joshua Becker. Hit the subscribe button wherever you're listening to this, and we will come at you every Friday with some frugal goodness, because like we said before, alliteration. But before we go, here's my favorite quote from Joshua Becker's book, The More of Less, and it goes like this. Don't love things or even the absence of things. Love people. Until next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Frugal Friends is produced, edited, and mixed by Eric Sirianni. Oh my gosh. Just leaving us with that knowledge.
Yeah. Well, it was Joshua Becker's knowledge, but it was my voice. So how do we split the income? Like 70-30, 60-40. I don't know. I don't really want to go like much more than that. Because like
your voice lends a lot. So,
you know, it's my voice. Like no one else can have it. So words, however, like anybody can have words.
It's so
true.
But
when it's spoken with my voice, like, yeah, clearly I get the bigger cut there.
Henceforth.
Henceforth. Hitherto now.
I didn't realize I said it. And so when he complimented me on the usage of it, I was like, did I say that? And I don't know how I used it, so I can't do it again.
I'm pretty sure we'll have it in the recording. When you said it, I literally was like, whoa, she just said henceforth. And didn't that an I? But then I also had to think through, like, what is the correct proper usage of the word henceforth? Like, when do you insert that into a sentence? I think you did it flawlessly. But yeah, it took me a minute.
Oh, somebody get me a publisher. I'ma write me another book.
I'ma write me another book, and it's gonna have the word henceforth in it.
Yeah.
Boom. All right, I gotta get on a plane. I gotta go home.